I'm Marco Werman, and this is The World. We're a co-production of the BBC World Service, PRI, and WGBH Boston. Now, there is no doubt. U.S. officials say the video posted yesterday by militants showing the beheading of American journalist Stephen Sotloff is authentic. Today in Estonia, President Obama said the killing will not intimidate Americans. And here at home, Vice President Joe Biden vowed to track down the killers in a fiery speech in New Hampshire.
They should know we will follow them to the gates of hell until they are brought to justice. Because hell is where they will reside. Hell is where they will reside.
The militants who held and murdered Sotloff and fellow journalist James Foley before him call themselves the Islamic State, or ISIS, and one of their strongholds is a part of northeastern Syria, not far from the border with Turkey. The BBC's Ian Pannell is just back from visiting the Turkish side of that border. I asked him to describe what he saw there.
You stand on one side, on the very tip of NATO's southern flank, and 100 yards across the barbed wire fence is the Islamic State and this giant black flag with the Shahada on it, the Declaration of Faith written on it. It flies on the other side of the border. This is a town, Tal Abyad, in northern Syria that is controlled by the Islamic State in Raqqa province, where there's certainly been some speculation that some of the hostages taken by the militant Islamists are being held.
And for years, you and many other journalists crossed over this border time and again, undetected by security. I mean, that border was essentially wide open?
Yes, the borders were wide open. We went across. Other journalists went across. Aid workers went across. And so did foreign fighters. The place I'm talking to you from at the moment is a hotel, one of the many hotels that has been frequented by all these people. But you always used to see this mingle of fighters coming in from across Syria, foreigners appearing at the airport. You almost used to joke that some of the planes landing in the local airport was like jihadi airways. You saw these young men coming in from the Gulf, from elsewhere in the Muslim world, but also from Europe, and we believe also from North America, to come and join the fight. Many of them came originally long before ISIS or ISIL or the Islamic State existed. Many of them came because they were adamant that they should support what they saw as a justified struggle against President Assad. The argument that you hear, which I find fascinating from people locally and from those who've been involved in the struggle in Syria, is that because the West did not intervene, because no help came, they welcomed the jihadis with open arms. They believed that the jihadis would come and help them in the fight against President Assad. But as we know, that isn't ultimately what happened. They ended up turning their guns on each other.
Ian, you also spoke with a man who trained a suicide bomber who crossed the border from Turkey into Syria. And this person was a U.S. citizen who grew up in Florida. What did this man tell you?
Yes, that's right. He said he'd met this young man from Florida working in one of the refugee camps inside Syria, and internally displaced people, and that he'd been working with children. He was very moved by what he saw, in particular the orphans, and he'd met this trainer who was there with a weapon and said, how could I learn to fight? I want to fight against the forces who he saw as responsible for that. In other words, the forces loyal to President Assad. And so he went to this training camp along with hundreds of others, many of them foreigners. He learned basic fighting techniques. He, like many others, became more and more radical. He ended up joining Jabhat al-Nusra, which is al-Qaeda's official franchise inside Syria. And in May of this year, killed himself and presumably many others in a suicide bomb attack in Idlib province. So, you know, if his story is to be believed, the one of the trainer, is that here you had a young man who was motivated by wanting to help the Syrian people. He was a troubled young man, but he didn't come here as a fighter, according to the trainer. But he ended up becoming one, ended up becoming radicalized, and ended up killing himself and others. And the argument you hear from people inside is this is a story that's repeated many times over.
So from your perch there in Antakya in Turkey, what do you see happening on Turkey's border with Syria now? Are Turkish officials seriously clamping down on these border crossings?
I do see a concerted effort to try and stop people. But when you hear politicians talking about how to deter people from coming out to Syria, how to stop people from joining ISIS or the Islamic State. It feels a little bit like trying to close the stable door after the horse has bolted. I suspect that most people who want to join those groups have already done so and are already across. The challenge is, how do you deal with the Islamic State that flies its flag on NATO's border, and how do you deal with the foreign jihadis who threaten to bring the fight home?
Ian Pannell with our partners at the BBC, speaking with us from Antakya in Turkey. Ian, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you very much. Good to talk to you.